turn this meeting over to Gary T. from Tulare, Kings County area, who has 42 years of service.
I'm a gravel addict. My name's Gary Toon. My clean date is about 9:30 Saturday morning, August 9th, 1975, in the White Horse Bar in National City on National Avenue. I remember it that way because my sponsor told me, if you don't remember your last, you haven't had it yet. So it's ingrained right here. He was my sponsor for 35 years until he died on me. So I'm pretty much exactly like he was. I asked him a few times why he thought that I stopped. And he told me, it's because you got to want to want to. I didn't understand it. I told him that was a bunch of, you know, double talk. But in our readings and in our books, there's a phrase in there, we get to want to. We have to have that. There's another one in the promises that says our whole attitude on life will change. I'm a firm believer, if you don't change your attitude, there ain't no way that you're going to stay clean and sober. It's not going to happen. He used to start out, I asked him, you know, he was taking me to, he was a speaker up in Hollywood one time. And I was supposed to be the 10-minute warm-up speaker. And he's driving, and I'm over there sitting in a passenger seat, and I got a stack of 3x5 cards about this thick. And I got all this stuff written down on it, I'm going through it. OB looked at me and said, what the hell are you doing? He says, well, I'm going to talk about this stuff. He says, you got 10 minutes, you dumbass. I says, well, how do you prepare? He says, I'm praying right now on the way up there. What do you mean you're praying? I pray for God's word to come through my mouth from him. And that's what I did on the way from Visalia to here this morning. I don't make a bunch of preparations anymore. You know, about the way he used to start out, he says, I always start at the beginning. And sometimes it gets a laugh. Sometimes people look at you like you're stupid. I was born at a very young age of great discomfort to my mother. That's the start. Yeah. That's the way we all started out one way or another. You know, we either come out to shoot or out the belly, whatever. But he was a great influence on me because he never told me anything that wasn't true. He told me a lot of stuff I didn't understand. I came to believe that sponsors have a Jedi mind trick mentality. They can con their sponsees into anything. Last week I met with two of my sponsees, and both of them said that they were in pain. I said, good. I said, what the fuck are you talking about? Good. I said, well, if you're not in pain or in discomfort, you're not willing to move or move on. See, in the military, there's a saying, pain is weakness leaving the body. If you're laying in bed, if you lay down in bed and go to sleep at night and wake up in the exact same position that you lay down in, you're dead. Because you get uncomfortable and you roll over and you move. We all do that. But we don't move until we're uncomfortable. I don't make any progress in my recovery if I'm not uncomfortable. I learned that early on. I had about two and a half months clean and sober, and I got transferred to a new command. The new command was probably 1,800 to 2,000 people. And they called down to the shop and had me walk over. It was on 32nd Street Naval Base in San Diego. And had me walk from the shop over to the captain's office. That's the longest fucking walk I ever took in my life. Because I knew that something in my past had come up. And I was on my way out. I'll get back to why I thought that later. So I went up there and I told the secretary who I was. She says, go on in. Captain's waiting on you. I went in and he said something that when I went to a captain's office, they never said before, is to have a seat. I was usually standing on the other side of a podium like this, and they were taking stuff off of me. and getting in my wallet, which I didn't like at all. He says, "You're going to be my drug and alcohol counselor for this command." I jumped out and said, "What the fuck are you talking about?" You know, this guy's stupid. I had maybe two and a half months clean and sober. And he says, "Well, you've been through rehab twice, so you know more of counseling than anybody else at this command." I said, "Oh, shit." So I was thrown into service pretty damn quick. But he didn't just leave me sitting there. He sent me to UCLA for drug and alcohol studies, UCSD, USF, sent me back to Rutgers University, drug and alcohol studies. I got all this brain shit in my mind. Sometimes it plays like K-Fuck radio, but it's still there. You know, I don't care how much knowledge you get about the disease of drug addiction, alcoholism, cancer, swollen tooth, whatever. I don't care how much you get. You can't cure it yourself. That's why programs like these, like what Jimmy Kay did, what Bill and Bob did, they knew they couldn't do it alone. They knew that someone else had to help them, no matter what. At first, I thought that was a bunch of shit. Then some jackass told me, all you got to do is surrender. Well, I was in the military at the time and had been in, I went into the Navy in 1959. My first duty assignment was underwater demolition. And I went to a nice little vacation spot in Southeast Asia and wreaked havoc, threw bombs, shot at people, threw knives at people, all that bullshit. In the 24 years I spent in the Navy, I spent 7.5 either in country or off the coast of Vietnam, one or the other. The rest of the time I spent at sea, mostly. So it was no problem for me not to use for, you know, 30, 60, 90 days as long as the ship was out to sea. But later on you learn certain people on the ship have certain stuff and you get to be friends with them. One time we were painting the bilges with a special kind of paint, and the only thing that would clean it up was alcohol. So I ordered isopropyl, which is non-drinkable alcohol. And my division officer, in his infinite wisdom, looked in the book, and he said, well, this stuff here is $8 less for a 5-gallon can than what you're ordering, so we're going to order that. He ordered me 25 gallons of 190. Now, when you are a prospering entrepreneur, let's say, and you get together with the ship's corpsman, and they got these little bottles, and you could sell them for $10 a bottle to prospective customers, shall we say. And I guess that's the first time I ever became a dealer. You know, I hadn't thought about that in a long time. I really hadn't. But, you know, because you don't know doesn't mean you don't know. Most of us, all of us, when we came in here, we were ignorant. I'm not saying anybody's dumb. I'm not saying anybody's stupid. I thought when somebody called me ignorant, they were calling me stupid. And then my sponsor looked at me and he says, "Get yourself a fucking dictionary and look in it. Find out what the word means. All that means is you just don't know yet. You have a chance to learn." That's why we all, when we're first sitting in here, we don't understand what the hell's going on. What are they talking about? You know, surrender to win. What the hell's that about? My father was killed in the Bataan Death March, start of World War II. So I never saw him, he never saw me. At 17, I went into the military. I went into the military because I thought it was cool. My stepfather came out of the Pacific. He was Army Air Corps, bounced around a whole bunch of islands over there. He had 7 sisters, and all 7 of those sisters were married to men, and during World War II, they either went to Europe or in the Pacific. That's the people I was raised around. My grandfather did a lot of my raising because my stepfather was an oil well digger. And him and my mother traveled to Kuwait, Saudi Arabia, Venezuela, places like that, so he could set it up and drill oil wells. They left me on a cattle ranch over by Kalinga. And my grandfather and grandmother had a lot to do with my raising. My grandfather, Chiricahua Apache. My grandmother, she was born in Germany, came to the United States in 1902. And you talk about the Rock of Gibraltar. They look like a bowl of jelly compared to them two people. So surrender was not in my vocabulary. And when he said that, I didn't understand it. See, I equated that as far as military or confrontational. That's not what it's about. We have to surrender to the fact that we got a disease. We're sick people that need to get well. In order for us to get well, my contention is that you got to reach out. You got to surrender yourself to other people. It's not that you let those other people rule your life, because that's not what this is about. We become self-sufficient. I've met thousands of men and women in AA and NA that become self-sufficient. If you really look around and talk to the young ones when they first come in, how many of them do you think go back to school? Probably about 80% of them. A sailor without coffee is dead, so watch it. Now, there's a friend of mine, most of you know him, Big Jim. He just had a gastric bypass. Anyway, I told him one day he was doctoring up his coffee. And I looked at him and said, "You must have diesel rags tied around your ankles." He said, "What are you talking about?" I said, "Shit, you put all that crap in there, you must have diesel rags." So what's that for? So keep the ants off your candy ass. You know, I'm kind of brash sometimes to people. Anyway, being clean and sober is the greatest accomplishment I've ever made. I've been married 6 times, and my 6th marriage is almost over now. I'm in the middle of a divorce after 48 years. So you can tell when I was younger, I joined the 4F club. Find them, feel them, fuck them, forget them. That's just the way I was. Impregnate them, leave. My oldest daughter, she'll turn 57 in a couple days. And the first time I saw her, she was 18 months old. And I seen her, held her in my arms, and my ex-wife handed me with a set of divorce papers. That was it. Before I went back to Vietnam, 3 weeks later, I was married again. And she was pregnant when I left. I could impregnate, I just couldn't be around her. That was because of what I did, what I drank, what I used, what I got into. I didn't care for other people's feelings. Today, I can care about other people's feelings. And it's kind of hard sometimes when I look back at it to realize what I did and who I did it to. A lot of us come in here and we say, "Well, this disease has nothing to do with my family, it just has to do with me." We hurt the ones we love or who love us the most, no matter who we are. "Oh, I wasn't that bad." Well, how bad is that bad? Look in the book, you'll find out. You know, I'm a firm believer that you get yourself a sponsor who helps you go through the book. And like Rick says, clean house and help others. I can't keep this if I don't give it away. I've been around, I moved to Visalia in 02, something like that. And I remember seeing Poncho at the Alano Club and other places. A lot of you I've seen around here. One of the neatest things for me today is to be walking around town and see one of you, and we have our miniature meeting. All we got to do is nod at each other. I know I'm going to be all right today. I'm going to be all right every day because God said I will. My sponsees get mad at me. They come to me and say, well, I found God. Fuck, I don't know about your God. Mine can't get lost. What do you mean you found God? That means you lost him? Well, I never had him. Well, then you didn't find him. He found you. I believe wholeheartedly, 100%, God found me. He's got another purpose for me. Because when I got here, I wasn't worth a pile of shit. I wasn't worth powder to blow me up with in my own mind. That's why I talk about K-Fuck Radio playing in my head. And the first time my sponsor said that to me, I looked at him, what are you talking about? He says, and then I asked him, how do you get rid of it? He says, come here. So I leaned over to him and says, change the station. What a concept. I said, okay, how do I do that? He says, get into the book, talk to people, go to meetings, help someone. Sponsees probably do more for my clean and sober time than I do. Because when I sponsor someone, I'm giving freely of what same thing people gave me when I got here. Same damn thing. They reached out to me. They asked me to come back. I was kicked out of some of the neatest places in the Skid Rows and waterfronts all over the damn world. I was kicked out of a bar in Bangladesh. That if you went in there without an AK-47 and a SEAL team, you probably end up dead. And I was kicked out of there for being too damn rowdy. I didn't understand that shit. But I probably was. You know, I used to drink and go into blackouts, use and go into blackouts, combination of. One time in November 1966, I was in Long Beach. I was getting ready to go aboard another ship on a Friday. And the following Monday, I was headed back to Vietnam to do a special job. And I started drinking. I started using. The next thing I can totally remember, I'm standing on a parade ground in Vietnam, and some Marine generals pinning some stuff on my chest. That's the middle of February 1967. That's the next thing I remember. I don't remember what happened in that time. I can read about it. I did read about it, and I burnt the fucking paper up because it wasn't me. It wasn't who I am today. I'm not that same person. After about 15 years in the Navy, I had been, anybody knows anything about the military, an E-9 is the highest you can go as an enlisted man. I went from E-1 to E-9, to E-8, E-7, E-6, E-5, E-4. And I worked my way back up through time, sober, clean. Because I was doing something for someone else and not me. And the only reason I got to stay in, and I talked to a few captains and a couple of admirals about it, who reviewed my record, was because of what I did in Vietnam. That's the only reason. And I'm grateful for that. After about, 15 years, this one captain, I went before him for various or whatever I did. I don't remember. And he sent me to a court-martial. I went to that court-martial, and they recommended a bad conduct discharge. After 15 years, they were going to take all my uniforms, anything to do with the military, and walk me out the gate. That was it. But I had to go back and see that convening authority, which was that commanding officer. And he says, you be back up here tonight at 1800 in civilian clothes. We're going someplace. And I says, but I'm restricted to the ship. He says, I'm the one who restricted you. Be back up here. So I went back up there that night. And he took me to a meeting in Hollywood. I went into that meeting, and I seen a lot of people I seen on a little screen and a big screen. They weren't there because they were celebrities. They were there for one reason and one reason only. They needed recovery. They needed to work on themselves. He didn't sign that bad conduct discharge. So about 8 years later, I retired. I retired after 24 years in the Navy. I can say that I loved it. I can say that I hated it. There were times that I liked it, times that didn't. But the last 8 years that I spent in the Navy, I was clean and sober, and I traveled all over the world doing what I did. Went to meetings in all kinds of places. Went to places that I'd been before and never seen anything. Went back to Hong Kong, sober, clean. Couldn't stand the smell of the Wan Chai district, which is where I always hung out. But when I got there, they had these tours that I got, you know, the guys that had diesel rags tied around their ankles, they went on them fucking tours. Us men, we didn't do that shit. So I went on one of these tours, and they took us about maybe two and a half miles off of Wan Chai to a place called Tiger Balm Gardens. And I'm walking around there just in awe of how beautiful it was. So I asked the tour guide, so how long has this been here anyway? This is pretty new. Oh, we keep it up. It's only been here about 1,200 years. Yeah. All the times that I had been there and never availed myself of looking at it, seeing it. You know, I went to a meeting in Perth, Australia. And a guy asked me, he says, you want to go to a special meeting tomorrow night? And I said, sure. He says, be here at 5 o'clock. I was there at 5 o'clock, jumped in his car. We drove about 2 hours south of Perth. He took me to a maximum security prison for a meeting. It's a combination meeting down there, NAAA. Walked me right in the gate, sat down, they checked me out the whole bit. Try that in the United States. Shit, 6 months later, they'll almost get to look at your ID card. It's amazing to me how much difference there is around the world of NA and AA, and how much similarities there are in NA and AA all over the place. I never smoked marijuana all the time I spent in Vietnam, but I'd take it and I'd mix it with Red Man Chew in the back, and that's the way I got it. I don't know if it worked or not because I was drinking at the same time. So it took me from point A to point B, and I didn't have to physically get up and move. That's what I wanted. Not to have to move. I didn't want to hurt. And like I said, pain is weakness leaving the body. Look at it that way and move. Go forward. Find out which is forward for you. Which is forward for everybody in this room is in that damn book. All you got to do is get into it. Get into it with someone who's been into it before. You don't go to a Volkswagen mechanic to fix your Cadillac. You go to a drug addict to help you with your drug addiction. One who has been there before will help you if you avail yourself of that. If you don't, they ain't going to help you. No one in here that I know of is what they call them, a mind reader. I don't read minds. Well, why didn't you say something to me before? Hey, I'm going to let you make your own damn mistakes. People let me make my own damn mistakes. They let me make mistakes in this program, and then finally they'd say, are you hurting enough? Why don't you try this? I've been sober about 3 years. And I was back in the Philippines. And I'm walking down the street out in town, a little place called Olongapo. Had more cat houses and bars than you know what to do with. And I'm walking down the street and see this young lady on the other side on the corner. Now, young Filipino women that I associated with back then did not have big breasts. This one did. She stood out and I said, oh Lord. So in my infinite wisdom, I walked up to her, asked her if she spoke English. She said, yes. I said, do you know where there's a meeting? I don't want a fucking meeting. I want something else. You know, I'm not stupid. She says, yeah, I'm on my way to one right now. And you could have knocked me over with a feather. What that woman did, she took me to a meeting. We jumped in a jeepney, I don't know, half hour ride, and went to a place called the Serenity Shack. In a meeting, she sat in the back of the meeting. And I kind of, you know, glance over every once in a while. After the meeting, I ask her, I says, you a drug addict or an alcoholic? She says, no. So why do you come to these things? I like to be with a sober man. Could have hit me in the head with a 2x4. The amount of times that I had depended on, you know, that thing about that long with a head on it that women go crazy over, called a dollar bill. You guys got a dirty mind. But she said she liked to be with a sober man, so she went to find some place where she could find someone that was clean and sober and didn't, you know, fall all over her, make her look stupid. And I understood that. But she did practice our seventh tradition. She was fully self-supporting through mine and others' contributions. That's not to say it was a bad thing. It was a good thing. I have a son by her. I've never seen. Never had a chance to get back to the Philippines. I do know that because she wrote me a letter. She didn't want anything. Her father was a plantation, what do you call him, foreman. He was French. She was half French and half Filipino. And her mother, she ended up being a nurse. Her name was Manette. Anyway, over to my period of being clean and sober, I have three kids that I raised, that I was around, that never saw me drunk or loaded. Not one time. Which is a great accomplishment to someone like me. My other kids never saw me drunk or sober either, because I'd never around. You know, I wasn't there. And I didn't care. All I cared about was Gary. Today I care about other people. I help people as much as I can. I don't walk around and ask people or tell people that I'm their sponsor. I gave that part up. People come to ask me to be a sponsor. I ask them a couple questions. How many times have you tried it before? What do you mean? How many times have you tried to get clean and sober? And they'll tell me 1, 2, 3, 5, whatever. I said, what are you willing to do different this time? It's not that they can give me a right answer or they can give me a wrong answer. It's a feeling that I get. I don't know what it is. It's the feeling that I get. I have pointed a lot of them to other people that I've talked to and been around that I think would be a better fit. And I accept some of them. Right now I've got, I think it's 8. And that's okay. I feel comfortable with that. They don't hold me up on a pedestal. I'm not there. Don't anybody ever do that with me. Because I'm not perfect. If I was perfect, I wouldn't be here. I wouldn't need to be here. I make mistakes. But I learn from my mistakes today because I have people I can talk to. O.B. Hinton was my original first sponsor. Had him for 35 years. And then he died. I went to his funeral down in San Diego. Came back. The following August on my birthday, I get this phone call. I look at the area code, San Diego. Well, I know two women down in San Diego. So I thought it was one of them. I said, Betty, is that you? She said, nope, it's a man's voice. I said, well, who the hell is this? She said, Dwayne. I had met Obie's oldest son. His name was Dwayne. He said, I'm calling you on your birthday to congratulate you. I said, why are you doing that? He says, I was digging through my father's things and I found his book. What book? His book of sponsees. The name, clean and sober date, phone number. He called every single one of them that he'd ever sponsored until they died, till the day he died. And his son picked up and did the same thing. See, that's things that we do for each other. I went to a meeting in Hong Kong about halfway up Victoria Peak in the bottom of a church. After the meeting, well, I went down to the bottom to Hilton Hotel. Now, the guy that led the meeting is an old Brit. Had on a paint-splattered leisure suit, green. Guess he's getting ready for St. Patrick's Day. Hell, I don't know. Anyway, when we got down to the Hilton Hotel, the maitre d' was falling all over himself to get us served, get people helping us and everything else. There was probably 8 or 10 of us. And I asked this Brit, I said, what the hell do you do anyway? He says, well, in the United States, I'd be the same thing as a Supreme Court justice. I do it for the British Crown Colonies. His name was Reginald. He gave me his phone number, gave me his address. And for 20-something years, he called me on my AA birthday also. And I called him on his. He passed away. See, things like that we do for each other. We get long-term friendships. I've heard many people, some of you in this room, talk about the people you knew when you were out there. That, yeah, you're acquainted with them. You see them, say hi. They say hi to you, and then you walk away from each other. But the people we meet in these rooms, my contention is I can call on anyone in this room. Some of you's only seen me today for the first time and ask for help. 98% of you will be there if you can. I will be there for you if I can. Physically, if I can do it, I will. That's what we do for each other. You ever been on a NA or AA move? You know, some person needs to move. You put the word out. I need to move on Saturday. And I need a little bit of help. I did that one time. Guy showed up, 5 or 6 trucks, 10, 15 people. Said, hey, let's get it done. But do not tell them you need a fence built. I did that one time in San Diego. I had to tear the son of a bitch down because it looked like a fucking snake. Because, you know, we as alcoholics and addicts, once we get clean and sober, like to be in charge. And for whatever reason, we'll fuck up a soup sandwich. It's just that way. But I've had so much fun, blessings, miracles happen in my life. After about, 8 years ago, I had a kidney transplant. And the reason I had a kidney transplant is because I was dying. I was end-stage renal failure. It's got nothing to do with drugs and alcohol, according to the doctors. I don't know if it did or not. But my ex-daughter-in-law donated a kidney so I could get one. I didn't get hers. I got somebody else's. My kidney came from a black lady in northern New Jersey. So once a month I get a little, you know, a little bitchy. I said that to one of my sponsors. He said, really? What kind of crap is that? But, you know, I got that because I was clean and sober. She wanted to donate that kidney so I could get one, so I could be around her children, my grandchildren. And at the time, they lived in Visalia. So I moved from Hanford to Visalia. I'm there a year. They're in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho now. I ain't moving to Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. There's two kinds of weather in Coeur d'Alene, 4th of July and winter. I don't do winter very good. Like I said, I've got 5 kids in the States and 1 overseas. I've got a good relationship with most of them. 2 of them don't accept me as a... They just don't accept me. But the door's open. My oldest daughter, I would call... When I took care of my mother, I took care of my mother the last 13 years of her life. I'm an only child, so I did that. It's a living amends that I made, that I wanted to make, that I got to make. It was a privilege to make. And when I did that, one time I kind of bragged about it to OB. He says, "You dumb son of a bitch, get down on your knees and pray that you don't die right now." I says, "Why?" He says, "It's not all about you. It's about her. It's about that woman that bore you, that woman that birthed you. You better make amends to your mother right now." And I really got to thinking about it. I went back and did. I made amends to her. See, I was patting myself on the back for something that should have been done, should never have thought about. And that's after a few years clean and sober. See, we claim progress, not perfection. If you think you're perfect in this program, you better go talk to someone. Talk to someone that you don't care for too much in NA or AA. The reason is they will tell you what they think of you. And you may not like it. And you may not like it for reasons that you have no idea about. I've learned more from the newcomers than I ever have from the people a long time. Because they've got new questions every single day. They've got questions that I may not be able to answer, but I can find out where the answer is. I've got a multitude of people I can call on. I've got books I can get into and read and help them get into those books and read. I've got steps that I can help them with. You know, a lot of meetings you'll go to, they'll have the steps and traditions up on the wall. An old guy in Chula Vista used to say this is an off-the-wall program. You take those steps and those traditions off the wall, put them in your life. First thing that's going to happen is going to make it different. Then it'll start making it better. The better I can make my life for me, the more comfortable I feel. I feel comfortable today in my own skin. Mike kind of likes this one. When I had about 3 years clean and sober, I was back in the Philippines. And I was walking down the street there on Subic Bay Naval Base. And I seen this guy, pretty sure I recognized him. We had been through UDT training before, with each other, and went through jump school together. We both went our separate ways for a few years. But old Harry was walking toward me, and I walked up to him, and I says, "You're Harry, right?" He says, "Yeah." And he looked at me. We were both clean and sober. We both discovered over the next 2 weeks that we didn't trust another human being because we didn't trust ourselves. Now, that's with 3 years clean and sober. Being a drug and alcohol counselor for the Navy, talking to a lot of people, going to a lot of meetings all over the world. We devised a plan. Now, I don't suggest anybody in this room do what I did, or Harry and I did. We devised a plan. We went over to Cuby Point, which is the air base there. And we got a plane to take us up. Took two parachutes. First time, Harry jumped out with two. I jumped out with none. He handed it to me on the way down. I put it on. We landed, got back in the airplane, went back up. He jumped out with no chute. I jumped out with two. I handed it to him. Went back up one more time, and both of us had chutes when we jumped. That's the last time I ever jumped out of an airplane. Now, if Harry was to walk through here right now and say, "Let's go do it again," after about 3 or 4 weeks of talking with him, I may. Because I don't know where he's been. He doesn't know where I've been. He doesn't know my mindset's what I'm saying. See, we knew each other's mindset. We needed to do something to change. We were hurting. KFUC radio was playing real loud in our head. We needed to change. We hurt. That's why I told those two sponsees when they said they were hurting, "Good, because now you're going to make a change." There's a saying in a UDT SEAL community called, "The only easy day was yesterday." That tells me every single day of my life is a new challenge. God doesn't make every day exactly the same. God doesn't give me the same challenges every day, but I better take care of the ones that He sets down in front of me. I can do anything and everything through God. I can do anything and everything through these programs. And if I really believe that, I've got a chance to make it all the way till tomorrow. That's all I'm guaranteed. I'm not guaranteed anything else. I'm not guaranteed to be clean and sober tomorrow. I have been for a while, so I can be pretty sure that I will be again. There's a thing in the book that talks about there come a time that I have no defense against drinking and using. None. Unless I do certain things. Stay connected. Don't isolate. You isolate, you're putting yourself in jeopardy. I hear people talking about relapse, slips, all that bullshit. I don't believe in any of them. But I do believe in an on purpose. On purpose for me, I started coming around these programs in 1972. My clean and sober date's in 75. So I was in and out, back and forth. I set myself up for failure. I started isolating, staying away from meetings, not talking to people. It'll be okay. I've been to enough meetings. I got enough education. I got I didn't have nothing. So I did it again. Talk to people out there that go back out and come back in. Go back out and come back in. Ask them what they did. In the first couple of years of going to meetings, we go to meetings, I hear somebody, I just came back in because I had a slip, I did this. I told OB, I said, I don't want to hear them people. They got nothing to say to me. So you better listen to them. You better listen to everything they have to say. Why is that? Because they're telling you what not to do. Listen. Have some compassion. Because for the grace of God, that could be each and one of us. Each and every one of us. At any time. You know, come July, the woman I'm married to right now, even though we're in the process of divorce, it'll be 48 years that we were together. The last 15 have been pretty rocky. Got to a point that, you know, it's like beating a dead horse. It just wasn't going to revive. Tried everything. At least in my mind we did. And we agreed. Got the kids together. The youngest is 40. The oldest is 44. Talked to them. This is where we're at. We didn't just decide, well, I'm going to go file. Fuck it, forget it. We talked it over. God has set me on this path. Doesn't mean I have to accept everything, but I better. Because God has set it down that I'm going to go there. I pray for the knowledge of His will for me and the power to carry that out. I got to believe that. I got to believe God has got things in store for me that are just fabulous. Because if I don't, I don't have anything. I don't have no hope. Usually at a mixed meeting, what I mean by that is male and female. I'll talk about this is where you get hope in your soul, not soap in your. You figure that one out. And you're laughing. You know, I was asked by John to be here today. I wasn't going to come because I had got my little bitty butt hurt, feelings hurt. Because 2 years ago, a certain gentleman in this room told me to be here on such and such and I was going to speak. I didn't speak that day because I was the only fucking one in the room. Wasn't nobody else in this room but me. I sat right over there with my own pot of coffee.
We heard you were coming.
Yeah. Took a while. But, you know, things happen. Mistakes happen. And that's okay. But I wouldn't miss it for the world. Because I got a lot of respect for this man. I got a lot of respect for everybody in this room. Every person in this room is a gentleman. Every woman I meet in NA and AA are a lady until they prove different. And some of them have, men and women. I walk away from them. First thing I ask people when they ask me to be their sponsor, what are you willing to do? If they're willing to do what it takes, I'll talk to them. I don't need to waste my time. I don't need to put stress on me. But when I'm helping someone, the stress just comes out of me. Thank you.